I think I might be correct in saying that the human race has a remarkable propensity to see the wrong in others, while being oblivious or choosing not to be willing to acknowledge our own faults. And if we're honest, it applies to all of us. It certainly does to me. And I had to smile on Friday night when my young grandson came up to me to tell me a big tale about what his little brother had been doing to him. And I find myself saying, hang on, don't tell tales. What have you been doing? And in this modern world, with all the global media, we seem to hear endless accounts, don't we, of the wrongdoings of various people and all the punishments that they deserve. And I don't know about you, but I got so depressed recently in our own sort of history when we kept hearing about MPs and others who ought to be stripped and their honours, they ought to resign. And I kept wondering about the skeletons hiding away in the cupboards of those who sought to bring that judgment. And I hope none of you have ever been the victims of social media judgments with all their horror and threats. You know, Jesus was quite forthright in his attitudes to this sort of behaviour. He said to us, before you look at the speck in your brother's eye, take a long, hard look at the log in yours. So, as we meet Amos this morning, let me remind you that he is a prophet from Judah, and he's gone north into Israel to pass on messages that he has received from God. And where Steve started this morning, it was the end of the time, the starting point, where he had highlighted in their turn the nations that surrounded Israel and Judah, listing their wrongdoings and saying how God will bring his judgment down upon them. And it seems likely to me that those listening in Israel would have been nodding their heads. Yes. Yes, a bad lot they are. They deserve God's judgment. Because the people Amos is speaking about, of course, have been their enemies. And their behaviour has certainly been deserving of denouncement. There's no doubt about that. And surely, according to Israel, I'm sure God should make them pay. I noted when I read that and went back to chapter 1 how actually what they were hearing about in that case were about past sins. It's all worded up to that point, including Moab, in the past tense, describing what these nations did when they invaded one another and other countries, what the horrors they did to their captives and so on. It made me think a little bit about the British Empire, which has turned out to be not so great after all, and the way some of our chickens are coming home to roost. But how do we feel if we are expected to bear the sins of the fathers? But just when the listeners think that Amos is finished, he turns his attention to Judah. And at first sight, this might be surprising, because up until now, all the other nations have been heathen nations. And yet maybe not, because actually, from Israel's point of view, Judah was seen at that time as a foreign nation. But Judah was part of God's treasured people. In which case, right from the start, those listening in Israel should have been alerted to the fact that in God's eyes, no one is exempt from the responsibilities and consequences of their actions before God, even his chosen ones. And in that sense, these accusations on Judah are far more severe than those levelled at the other nations. Judah had had the benefit of receiving the revelation of God's presence. They'd heard his word through the law of Moses and the prophets. God had given them a covenant relationship. They had rules by which they should live their life with their families and within their communities. But they'd rejected all that law. And in doing so, they'd in effect rejected God himself. they had heard God's word, but not acted on it. I think this should remind us as Christians that maybe we should examine ourselves to see if we truly embrace the word of Jesus in the way we live and behave. And let's face it, throughout the generations, there are plenty of churches and Christian communities who have not. And beware, because St. Paul, when he was writing to the Romans, warned, he said, "But it is not by hearing the law that people are put right with God, but by doing what the law commands." Still, I expect that all those who were listening to Amos at this time in Israel were still nodding their heads in agreement. Yes, Judah, they've not been a very good lot, have they? They deserve God's punishment. Until Amos does the unthinkable, he turns his attention to them. It's like he crept up to them. He came round in a circle and then crept inwards like a lion waiting to pounce. God's judgment will not be limited to those nations who will be welcomed, whose destruction would be welcomed by Israel. In fact, in God's eyes, Israel, by being disobedient too, had made itself a foreign nation. Israel, think about that. A foreign nation alienated from God. I wonder how we would feel if we were told that in God's eyes we were no longer his, but aliens. I stopped when I thought about that. That's really a really sort of horrific thought, isn't it, for those of us who want to be part of God's family. How important is our relationship with God? Remember, Jesus said when he talked about false disciples, those powerful words, "I never knew you." And in a way, this is what God is saying to Israel now. So what have they done wrong? Well, Amos starts by listing some of their transgressions. We might note that perhaps unlike those of the foreign nations, they were guilty of abusing their own people. Overcome by greed, they were breaking the law. They were even taking the coats and the sandals off the poor and selling people into slavery. It wasn't just greed and economic problems, was it? It was as if they looked down on the poor with disdain, making people lose their dignity. It's funny, isn't it? Because recently, I remember over recent years, we used to talk about the undeserving poor in this country. I think it's an awful phrase. It's interesting, perhaps, that with the economic situation at the moment and the energy crisis, it's not a phrase we hear anymore. Perhaps because people have come to realise that it can happen to anybody. You're going to hear a lot more about this in the coming weeks, as in the following chapters. Amos speaks of the complacency and the pride and the hypocrisy of Israel and what will befall them. And of course, this message is not to the whole population, because there were those who were not powerful, who were the actual victims of what they were doing. But Amos is not finished. He draws his attention to what God has done then. God has brought them out of Egypt as when they were slaves. They spent 40 years in the wilderness. Now, that was a pretty rough time, a pretty long, hard 40 years, yes. But throughout all those years, God had kept his presence known. He'd provided them with manna, with water, with a cloud to guide them by day and a pillar of fire by night. And the very land they are standing on now, he has given them. He's done all of these things to demonstrate his love for them. And what does God want in return? What do we want when we love someone? We want to be loved back. Maybe we do want to be thanked. We want to be respected in some way and acknowledged that love. And there are two ways of doing this, of course. One is just to say thank you and cherish. But the other is actually to act act in a way that shows that the love we've received, we can then reflect, if you like, upon all those that we meet in our lives. Israel was not doing that. It was not thankful for anything that God had done, and it was certainly not reflecting his love on those around them. And it wasn't being just in the wilderness in the past. They were still doing it. There was a sort of complacent affluence. And complacency is something you'll hear quite a bit about, I think, when we come to chapter 6. Maybe complacency is something we ought to think about ourselves in our in the society today, about people's relationship with God. But they'd done something else wrong too. Because throughout all this time, God had provided them with what we might call spiritual billboards in the form of a group of people called the Nazarites, people who were distinctly holy. They were doing what was right, and they wanted to show that they loved God and would follow in his word. But what do rebelling people do when they come across good people? Because what they should do is try and emulate them. But what was Israel doing? Just the opposite. It was seeking to coerce the good people into being bad. It's a sort of pretty low trick, actually, isn't it? And the one that really stood out to me was about the alcohol. These people, as part of their trying to keep holy, refrained from drinking wine. And Israel was guilty, as guilty as someone today putting a bottle of gin in front of an alcoholic. All these are just some of the ways in which Israel had tried to silence God's messengers and what they had done. So what now? Israel must learn that God will always oppose such oppressors, whoever they are. Israel's breaking had broken their covenant with God means actually that he is no longer obliged to keep his covenant with them and to keep his promises. And Amos warns them their downfall will come because there will be consequences for all those who oppose God. So what about us today? Just because we say we are followers of Jesus, just because we belong to this church, actually, we still have to ask the question, all of us, are we true followers of God, true children of God? We are all saved by grace through faith in Jesus Christ. But we're saved for a purpose, and that is to reflect God's glory in the world. Any sin or result in God's displeasure. And yet, of course, we know that just as a parent loves their child, whatever they've done, even if it's a serious crime, God never fails in his love for us. But that doesn't mean to say we are not deserving of some sort of punishment or teaching or one way of bringing back to do right. So it all starts in a way, doesn't it, where I started this morning. People like those in Israel who look at others and fail to see their own faults. And I think that one of the big teachings of this chapter today for us as a starting point is to take a reflection upon the fact that we need to look what we have done wrong, that speck in our eye, before we pass judgment on others, and being aware that God, yes, he can judge if we try and break our promise with him, even if he still loves us. How might we do that? Well, I go back to the 1960s. Alan told me he thought it was Sidney Carter, Carol. Well, I'll need Carol in a minute. But I think it was someone else, wasn't it? Who actually wrote a gospel song called I'm Standing in the Need of Prayer. Have you actually got the music or do I have to do it without? I just want us to, as we reflect, and I'm going to ask you to stand up. There's a wonderful chorus that we used to sing when I was a teenager. And it says, it's me, not everybody else. It's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer, standing in the need of being able to forget your forgiveness and the prayer to help live the life that I should. Some of you might still remember it. It's actually quite jolly, and I don't need to sing it standing, sitting down. Would you like to stand up and we'll see if Carol's found it? Have you found it, Carol? You can sing it without, with me.
It's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my brother nor my sister, but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my brother nor my sister, but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my neighbor, not the stranger, but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my neighbor, but the stranger, but it's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's me, oh Lord, standing in the need of prayer.